The following program is rated U for universal audiences and is considered suitable for listeners of all ages.
This is a presentation of Dream Realm Enterprises, where dreams are our reality.
And welcome back to Q Who. This is the second part of our 60th anniversary special, if you will, celebratory couple of episodes. Last time we talked with Mark Kalita, who plays the Master in DRE's fan-produced Doctor Who series. And in this episode, a little bit later on, we're going to be talking to Paul Arbisi, who plays the current Doctor in DRE's fan-produced series. He is Doctor number 3 for DRE, and he's who knows what number in the actual Doctor Who universe. The way I see the Doctor Who universe is it's kind of a multiverse. There are probably different offshoots, different realities, different Doctors in different realities. So our Doctor is somewhere out in the ether. Our series, it may not connect canonically with the TV series or anything else, but we can pretend that it does, and that's kind of what we do. So, in my mind, I kind of picture Ron Smith as the successor of Paul McGann. So, in a way, you could say that Ron was Doctor number 9. And then Jeff was Doctor number 10, and then Paul Arbisi is Doctor number 11 in our universe, in our version of the Hooniverse, if you will. So that's kind of how I look at it. That's what I've determined. Not that I'm trying to disqualify any of the other Doctors that came after, like in the new series and so forth, like, you know, the War Doctor, who I think was wonderful, and Christopher Eccleston, who I also think was wonderful, David Tennant, and then the extremely wonderful Matt Smith, who I have to say is my favorite new series Doctor, personally. So we're not discounting any of those and the others, but in order for our Doctor to exist, we kind of have to say this is a different universe, and this is how things happen instead of going that way. So the Eighth Doctor regenerated into Ron Smith. That's our universe. That's just kind of how I see it. Others may see it differently. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. You can see it however you want. And, you know, everybody has their own headcanon about these things. So, you know, you can look at it any way you want and number them any way you want. I guess the numbering doesn't necessarily mean anything anymore. And I don't know, with the 60th anniversary specials coming up, we may find out that it doesn't mean anything at all. Who knows what Russell T. Davies has in mind, but it'll be interesting to find out and see what his take is on, you know, who and what the Doctor is. So we know we had all that in the new series. We had that whole timeless child kind of thing, and that kind of rewrote Doctor Who history in a way, but I don't think Russell's going to retcon that, but I think he will probably just kind of spin it off into another way of thinking of who and what the Doctor is. And maybe he'll take this approach of, you know, we've got, you know, one universe where the Doctor lived this many lives or this long, you know, and maybe another universe where it went this way and there were these Doctors. And, you know, I think that would probably be the best thing for the series going forward, just so that we don't have to tie into the continuity so tightly that new viewers get completely lost and confused. And that way you could kind of enjoy it from any period in the show's history. And I think I kind of think that would be the best way to go. And that's just how I look at our series, at least. And it's kind of how I have to look at Classic Who versus New Who. So the new generation of Who I kind of see as its own thing. It's in its own universe. And the classic era, I mean, they're such different animals. You know, the classic era from William Hartnell to Paul McGann, they're so different from, you know, from Christopher Eccleston up through Shooty Got One now. It's such a different show than where it started, and yet it's the same show. On this show, Q Who, we tend to celebrate just classic Who, which is the first eight Doctors. And we make that distinction just because of the fact that, you know, they are, in my mind, miles apart. They're just, they're so different. And that's not to say that one is bad and one is good, and that's not to say that one is right and one is wrong. They are what they are, and they exist, you know, in sort of relation to each other. They just sort of exist side by side, but not necessarily in the same universe. At least in my head canon, they can't possibly be exactly the same timeline or canon, or, you know, however you want to look at it. There have been so many contradictions in the new series to things that went on in the classic series, and not the least of which was the Timeless Children situation. But right from the get-go, it seemed that Russell kind of contradicted the classic series in a lot of ways. The Doctor's age, for instance, being one, because he mentions being like 903 and I think it was Voyage of the Damned in that Christmas special, when in the McCoy era he was 957 or something like that. So, I mean, it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't correlate. It doesn't match up. So that just kind of tells me that there are different iterations of the Doctor. They're different, different timelines, different universes. You know, the 1 through 8 is in one parallel universe, and then War Doctor through, you know, 13, 14, 15, whatever, is in a different universe, different canon. So that's my headcanon. So I don't know what yours is, but again, nobody's wrong, you know. Nobody's wrong. It's really doesn't come down to a case of who's right and who's wrong anymore, because everybody's got their own headcanon, and everybody kind of makes up their own mind as to what's real and what's not. And I think we've always kind of done this as fans, is if we didn't like something that happens in the series, we just kind of, in our own head, we edit it out or edit around it, you know, rewrite it in our own head so that it does fit in with what we think is canon. So, you know, that's happened probably from the beginning, to be honest with you. And I think that's okay. I think that is all right. But today we are here to celebrate 60 years of this madness. And so, yeah, that's something I want to reflect on and kind of tell the story from my perspective, because I was introduced to Doctor Who in early 1979 when I was not quite 10 years old. I was going on 10, or very close to being 10 years old. A friend of mine, and I won't name names because, I don't know if anybody would want to be mentioned by name on here, but a friend of mine came over after school one day to hang out and play video games and whatever, you know, whatever it was we were doing at the time back in 1979, probably playing the Atari. And in the midst of doing all that, he said, "There's this new show on PBS. Have you heard of it? It's called Doctor Who. It's this British show. It's with this guy with this big long scarf." And I said, "No, I've never heard of that." He said, "Well, it's coming on in a few minutes. Do you want to take a break from playing games and watch it and see if you like it?" I'm like, "Sure, why not?" So we tuned in, and it was part 3 of The Android Invasion with Tom Baker. And yeah, it was just like this quirky thing that it kind of blew my mind, to be honest with you. Sitting there watching this, and I mean, yeah, it was the middle of a story. It was part 3. And so I was a little bit lost, and my friend was kind of catching me up on it a little bit and explaining what happened in the first half and telling me about some of these other adventures he'd seen. And so I'm sitting there just sort of fascinated because it was something totally different for me. It was so different from what we got here in America on American shows, sci-fi shows. We had Star Trek and we had Buck Rogers and Battlestar Galactica and things like that. You know, we had, you know, a number of sci-fi shows that were so different, you know, from what I was seeing. You know, first of all, it was the look of Doctor Who was different. A lot of it was on videotape, and I didn't make that distinction at the time, but it just looked so different. You know, it looked looked kind of like a soap opera, the way it was filmed, recorded, and but it you know, obviously it had a smaller budget and all this, so it was a small show compared to these big shows we'd had with Star Trek and Buck Rogers and so forth. So for me to be looking at that, looking at Doctor Who from the 70s, and it was so small. It was on a small scale. It was obviously a lower budget, and it was, you know, in a different accent, obviously. And so it was so quirky and so different from everything we'd seen here in America up to that point. And it fascinated me as a result. Not just, you know, not just the storytelling, not just the fact that it was science fiction, which of course I was all about. And of course we'd seen Star Wars by this time. And, you know, all those things were so big, and here's Doctor Who. And it was kind of like almost made in your backyard kind of thing. You know, but at the same time, it had something really cool and quirky about it that made it almost more appealing than all of that, because the storytelling was so rich, and it was, and Tom Baker was such an icon even then. You know, seeing him for the first time in part 3 of the Android Invasion, it was just like you were glued to him. You just couldn't, your eyes couldn't leave him, because he was just this amazing, quirky character, and he was taking you along with him on this adventure. And, you know, it just hooked me right in right then. So I kind of, you know, from that point on, I was hooked, and I never missed it again. And so I watched it every day after that. And it didn't matter that, you know, that I started in the middle of a story. You know, luckily I did have my friend there to kind of catch me up. But at the same time, it didn't matter that it started in the cliffhangers kind of hooked me in as much as, you know, the stories and the Doctor. The fact that it was a cliffhanger serial type of show, which, again, we didn't really get here in America except for, you know, on the weekends they would sometimes show those old 30s and 40s cliffhanger serials from, you know, way back when, like Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon and so forth. So I guess Doctor Who kind of reminded me of those, which I loved already. So it kind of put you in that frame of mind, and I loved that. I connected with that. I thought that was wonderful. And so the cliffhangers really hooked me in, as did the Doctor and the adventures and the whole look of the show and feel of the show. It was just like nothing else we'd ever seen. And yet, knowing that they had this small budget, knowing that it was not on the scale of like Star Trek or Star Wars, it still had this massive appeal. It still hooked me in. It hooked me in like those shows and movies just never could. And Star Wars was a big thing for me at the time. That was my thing. And Buck Rogers was a big thing for me. And Battlestar Galactica was a big thing for me. But then Doctor Who came along, and it was an even bigger thing for me because it was a smaller thing. I mean, if that makes any sense. So for me, that just that just pulled me in. That just pulled me in and inspired me. And it kind of, you know, it kind of lit that creative fire within me, more so than Star Wars did. And then, you know, I discovered other British things like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and so forth. And that just fueled the creative fire even more, those things. So, yeah, it's kind of, all of that kind of led me to this, to what I do now, which is, you know, audio production and telling stories and, you know, all things creative, made me want to write, amazing adventures. So, yeah, Doctor Who was a big influence on me in that way. Yeah, I mean, there's so much more I could say. I mean, I could make a six-hour podcast out of this, just reflecting on Doctor Who, my favorite moments, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to bore you with all of that. I probably bored you enough as it is. We've got some more business to take care of here, because we got to talk to Paul Arbisi, our doctor. So that's what we're going to do here shortly. First, I'm going to let you hear a clip of Paul's doctor in action, and then we're going to talk to him. So, here we go.
Who? Wait. It's you, isn't it? It's you. The Master.
That's right, Doctor. It is your Master.
Dream on. You're not my Master. You're just a psychopath with dreams of power, delusions of grandeur. You will never have true power. And even if you were to achieve universal domination, what would you do with it?
Oh, you would be amazed at what I would do with total power, Doctor. Absolutely amazed.
Oh, sure. Get real. You wouldn't have the imagination to do anything more than create chaos. It's all you really know. And as I said, you will never achieve such a lofty goal anyway.
Are you so sure, Doctor?
Okay, we are here now with the Doctor himself, Paul Arbisi. Welcome to the 60th anniversary celebrations here at Q Who, Paul. It's our Q Who interview.
It's actually kind of funny. Q Who interview.
All right, just want to ask you a few questions. The first one up is, what or when was your introduction to Doctor Who, the TV series?
It had to be around the time of Tom Baker when it finally started coming to my area in the Midwest. It was on, I think it was on the PBS station for the area. And so that was my first taste of the Doctor, was Tom Baker. What a way to start. It's kind of like going to a concert, for your first concert ever, going to see Kiss in concert. Because everything else like that is a little boring. So a little hard to follow up Tom Baker. But yeah, that's when I started. Probably, I'd have to say, early 80s, maybe, by the time it made it over there. It wasn't immediate. It took a little while to get over to this side of the pond. So, yeah, that was probably the first I ever saw was Tom Baker. And it was highly enjoyable. Campy, because by that time I had seen Star Wars. So, yeah, you look at the... Oh, look, it's green bubble wrap monster again. So, I mean, you had to look past the effects and pay attention more to the story and the characters. So, yeah. What's next?
What is the appeal of Doctor Who for you, Paul?
Oh, well, like I said, just covered some of that, the campiness of it all with the terrible special effects in the early days. I mean, I understand it was in the early days and everything. But, I mean, even if you look at TV shows over here in the 70s that were science fiction, their special effects were still not fantastic, but they were a heck of a lot better than that. And the one thing people have to keep in mind, because they'll pick on it and everything. It's like, it was a kid's show. They weren't going to spend whole tons of money to make it as perfect as they possibly could because it was a kid's show. So that's the appeal of me, for me, is that back in the day it was just considered a kid's show, but there was really good writing to it. There's interesting stories, there was interesting characters. So yeah, I mean, it was easy to look at it and not think kid's show. But when you boil it down, that's what it was.
What are some of your favorite moments or stories from the classic era?
Well, I obviously there's a lot of good ones. Because I didn't see much of the other Doctors back in the day when I first started watching. It wasn't until we got streaming where I could watch the rest of the stuff, and I got to see all the episodes. And Sylvester McCoy is one of my favorite Doctors. I like his chutzpah, you know, and his playfulness. Yet he's only joking around us so far. He's very good at that. And the storylines they had were very good then. They were a little bit more, you could, if you never watched it, you could almost tell that they were from the 80s, you know? And I kind of like that. But I think actually one of my favorite ones was, we watched it today, as a matter of fact, the wife and I. It's a Tom Baker episode, the one with the Loch Ness Monster. It's the Terror of the Zygons. And so you had the old suction cuppy looking Zygons in there. And the I keep forgetting about it, but it's like when you watch them playing with their control panel, it just looks like they're molesting mushrooms, you know? And so it's a... But it was a really good episode there, you know, because you had Lethbridge Stewart in there, the guys that work for him, Sarah Jane, beautiful, just beautiful woman. And a just very good storyline. And I'm wondering, everyone's talking about AI, if it's going to hurt things, help things, whatever. We're not sure yet. But it made me wonder, they've already, on some of the original Star Treks, they've gone through and any of the special effect shots in there, like the outside of the Enterprise and that, they've run them through the wash and made them look so much better than they did back then. I'm wondering if they'll be able to do that with an episode of Doctor Who. Just change it completely to where if you need to, you have the AI can take control and the characters all look the same, but the lighting might be a little better, the sound might be a little bit better, and when they cut to the monster, it looks like it's supposed to look instead of the old green bubble wrap. So that would be a thumbs up for AI destroying all of mankind so it can take over. Not so much. So, well, there's that one.
So what are your thoughts about your own take on the Doctor and DRE's fan-produced Doctor Who series?
Well, what can I say about my take on the Doctor? I'm awesome. No, I'm kidding. No. I'm enjoying every minute that I get to play the Doctor. It's kind of a dream come true. I mean, any Doctor Who fan to get to play the Doctor would be ecstatic, you know, and that's me. I'm ecstatic to play the Doctor. I thought it was a bit of a gamble when we decided to stick with my voice instead of having me try putting on a British accent. I was trying to convince John to have me go with a Liverpoolian, and you know, yes, I'm the Doctor from Liverpool, but let's just stick with your voice, which is always kind of funny because I don't know if a lot of people out there who've recorded themselves don't like listening to their own voice. I mean, I've heard of a lot of actors who
they don't even watch the movies that they're in because they can't stand seeing themselves up on the screen. Sometimes that's the way I feel when I listen back to my own voice. I can't. That's why I learned how to do accents and, well, imitations, is because I never liked the sound of my own voice. And so I just find it fascinating when somebody goes, well, we want you to be the star of our show and just use your own voice. So, okay. So, but yeah, I'm really enjoying my time as the Doctor, and I hope it goes on for a long time until you can actually hear my voice age.
And to follow up on that, do you have a favorite moment from your run as the Doctor so far?
It's hard to say because I haven't been at the helm for that long yet, I don't think. And I do have, I would say the Death Trap one was probably my favorite. I like the machine manipulating us, kind of like that, you know, to turn us on each other. It was a very, it's one of those stories that can keep you on the edge of your seat. And so, yeah, that's, so far that's been my favorite one, has been Death Trap. But all of them are excellent, I think. And I just foresee them getting better in the future. Hopefully they get better with me and my companions. I love my companions. One of these days I'm going to have to actually meet them. That would be an interesting take. Not on the story, but in real life.
Now, of the first 8 TV doctors, who would you say is your doctor, the one that you consider your favorite, and why?
I can tell out of the first 8 doctors, yes, that's definitely Tom Baker. He's the first one I saw. He was just so gregarious and everything. And truthfully, he ran for 7 years. And I was at that age to where I was out doing things. I was just about drinking age and partying and everything like that. So I didn't really see much past the Baker years. I think I saw a little bit of Peter Davison, but I don't remember seeing any of it after that until I actually got married and settled down and they started doing streaming services. And then we could start watching from the very beginning all the way up until current. And I think it's just because that was the first thing I saw that's why it still resonates with me the most. And that's the Tom Baker era. And so Tom Baker is always going to be my favorite doctor. There's a lot of toss-up after that on who I like. I mean, it could be Sylvester. I like Sylvester. He has a hell of a personality. It's funny. My son-in-law likes 8, what was it? No, 9, 10, and 11. I like 12, Capaldi. Because cranky old man, so I can relate to him. For some reason, he doesn't like the cranky old man. But yeah, Tom Baker for me. And I think that kind of wraps it up. If you have any other questions for me, feel free to ask. Make sure you listen to all of our Doctor Who episodes. And leave comments. Don't forget, we have a YouTube page now, so there's plenty of room underneath those things to make a comment. It's very easy to put a comment. It's very easy to put a positive comment. So I want to thank all of you for listening to this part of the Q Who, and that's the interview with me. And go listen to our show. And that's about it. Thank you much. Good night.
All right. Well, thank you for visiting with us, Paul, and answering these questions. We appreciate it. Here on the 60th anniversary of Doctor Who, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. All right. We appreciate Paul Arbisi speaking with us. and sharing his time and his thoughts about Doctor Who. And we really appreciate the fact that he is our doctor. I think he is a wonderful doctor. I'm not going to compare him to his predecessors, not the TV ones, nor his DRE predecessors, Ron Smith and Jeff Niles, who are, you know, they were their own doctors, and had their own, their own high points and low points, and were wonderful, equally wonderful. So I'm not going to pick a favorite of the three we've had at DRE. I'm not going to do that. I love all three of them. And having known all three of those guys, I've loved all three of those guys. I had a very special friendship with Jeff, and we lost him, sadly. This is as much a tribute to him as it is to the series Doctor Who. So, Jeff, I know somewhere you're celebrating the 60th anniversary with us, and we're so happy to have had you while we had you with us, and being the Doctor, which I know was a great dream for you to play that character, and you did it marvelously. So yeah, I'm not going to compare any of them, though. I'm not going to pick a favorite, but I do appreciate Paul RBC, who has taken on the role with gusto and doing it in his own unique way. He's totally different from any other doctor, as it should be. I think every doctor should be their own incarnation and not try to copy any others from the past. And, here at DRE, that's what we do. We set out to not repeat what's come before, try to mimic any other doctors and stories that have come before, but to make them their own thing. So I think Paul's done that, and he's doing a great job. That's my opinion. I think he's absolutely fantastic. So we do appreciate the fact that he is the Doctor and that he stopped by today to give us a quick interview. But anyway, thank you guys for joining us for this big 60th anniversary celebration over two episodes of Q Who. I wish we could, do more just on this subject, but next time I'm going to actually be reviewing that animation that I mentioned earlier in this broadcast, webcast, however you want to look at it. The Underwater Menace has recently been released in the UK, and I will be getting my copy of the Steelbook Blu-ray of that, and I will go through that with a fine-tooth comb and have a review for you next time, talking about that and what I think of it. And I can't wait to see it. I think it's going to be wonderful, but we'll see. We'll see. Will it be the latest one to disappoint, or will it be me going, wow, now I can reevaluate this story and maybe it's better than I thought it was? We will see. We will see. And you will find out next time as I review that. So until then, you know the drill. Please stay tuned.
You have been listening to a fan production for Dream Realm Enterprises. This is a not-for-profit program.